I can't. My father just did so good and whatnot. I mean, but he put the brute in his room. That's where they put all the cologne. They put it in their top drawer and just sit it in there. And it just keeps piling up every Christmas. And then you go steal a cologne when you're like 16 and going on your first date and start dousing your body in the shit. You say, hey, I'm on my first date. Find out how bad it burns when you put cologne on your private parts, right?
This is the 70s versus the 80s podcast. This is the podcast for you if every time you hear that Old Spice whistling, you think about semen rolling down your harbor town. What did I say there? What? Well, I think you know what I mean. And today we are going to be talking Old Spice versus Brute versus High Karate. And we'll be starting out with that. And then we're going to talk a little Bowen Luke Duke versus Coy and Vance Duke. Basically, we'll be talking everything Duke's a Hazzard there. And followed that up by we will do a song from 1972 versus 1982. So 50 years versus 40 years ago. And you can guess along with us to figure out what songs it is. Again, this is the 70s versus 80s podcast. I am Mike. And today I am joined by always by my co-host Jim, and Jim sounds like this.
Michael, you almost tore my dick off on that jump. Sorry about that, kid.
And we are also joined by our longtime contributor. I was going to call him our Coy and Vance, but he's actually our cooter. He's our third honorary Duke boy. And I think he knows more about vehicles than Cooter, as you're going to hear in today's episode. It is Brian, and Brian sounds like this.
It's like American Pie, the song, is about, and then A was the death of Buddy Holly. Well, that makes sense. It could be. B was the loss of innocence of an entire generation. Yeah, you can see that. Or then C was 5 minutes too long.
So, folks, let's get into the commercials now, shall we?
Wake up. Wake up with Old Spice and feel the freshness of the open sea. Wake up with Old Spice. Feel the spray on your face and the wind.
So there we are, guys. What do you guys remember that one?
I remember Old Spice, where it was a sailor, like he comes into dock, he's got his Old Spice, and he's walking then along the streets of San Francisco, and he throws up a bottle of Old Spice to this couple looking over, and then the woman gives her nodding approval, and then the sailor keeps walking. All of a sudden, he's like in the middle of Kansas or something, and there's white picket fence, and he's like this old barn, and he throws it into an old guy, and he's shaking his head yes, and it's just like, how, you know, this sailor likes to walk, apparently. If he's got to go that far when he gets to shore. The sailor motif is kind of funny as a kid.
Yeah, if he's going to do all that walking, he's got to have something that smells better than him. So, I like how back in those days, they still used a lot of imagery in commercials. You know, their feel, they use so many adjectives that conjured up this imagery. They don't have to do that anymore because they dumbed down our, you know, everything that comes into our ears today has been dumbed down to a point where you don't even have to think about it anymore. They just buy this. They don't, you know, try to conjure anything.
TikTok length of just blasting you with something.
Exactly.
Or
YouTube.
And then the big rumor, I don't know if it was that commercial, but for most of the 70s, the actor was John Bennett Perry, which ended up being Matthew Perry's father.
I did not know that.
You can kind of see it in the eyes a little bit. They look a little bit the same, yeah.
In the High Karate ones or in the Brute?
Old Spice guy, the whistling guy.
Yep. I never knew that.
Okay.
Maybe that's why his son has been doomed to poor acting roles his entire life. I was not a friend. I just could not understand how that show was I mean, I get it. You know, they're appealing to you know, girls younger than us, but my God, that was a bad show.
So, yeah, Matthew Perry's dad's like, son, you're doomed to a lifetime of bad roles because I was the whistling guy in the Old Spice commercials.
Mm-hmm.
For years, we had watched Friends when it first came out, and we had a pair of recliners sitting next to each other, my wife and I, and we'd call them our Joey and Chandler chairs, not thinking that the kids didn't understand what that was. So then the kids got TVs in their room, and my daughter started watching Friends because they're in reruns, like, at night. So, like, between 11 and when she'd go to bed, she'd watch Friends reruns. All of a sudden, one morning, she comes out, and she's like, now I know why you call them the Joey and Chandler chairs. So she must have saw the episode where they first got their chairs.
And
that show Friends was like you said, it's kind of sometimes it's I'll put it on in the background, and sometimes it's unwatchable, like Jim said, and sometimes I go, oh, this is better than I thought. So it's I don't know what the deal is with it, but yeah,
it depends who wrote the episode, I think. But
well, right, because some are just so blatantly predictable, even if you haven't seen it in forever, where it's just like it's unwatchable, like Mike said. And some shows, though, if you haven't watched them for a while, when they're fantastic and you've kind of forgotten about it, you're like, oh, this is great. But yeah, Friends is, like you said, it's background clutter noise.
Yeah, and you know, it can be predictable if it's at least funny. I mean, make it at least funny, but they could never do both at once.
Okay, thanks for your honest opinions on Old Spice, guys. Let's talk some Brute now.
Once I hurt my knee trying to make a tackle, a lot of people thought I shouldn't have been trying to make. Well, let me tell you, if you put that uniform on, you're supposed to be a football player, and you've got to be ready to go all the way. That's just the way I am. I guess that's why I use Brute. I like the smell. I like the way it works, the way it lasts.
Brute by Fabergé. After the game, after anything, Brute goes all the way.
If you're not going to go all the way, man, I mean, why go at all?
That was Joey Namath we just heard there. What do you guys...
Is there anything more symbolic of the 70s as a decade that we're looking back at it now as adults and we can see all the double innuendos? You know, I like this commercial is like a double innuendo-thon with Joe Namath representing the 70s and double innuendos. It's
Come on. I think Joe was just giving an after-game interview there. I think he was pretty...
Oh, so go all the way was a football term?
Yeah, exactly.
And it had no other meaning.
Yeah.
As a, you know, 4 and 5 year old, when you'd see it, you know, on the, you know, when you're watching Monday Night Football or whatever, yeah, okay. But yeah, no. Innuendo-thon.
I just wish in that commercial he would have been wearing his fur coat, because I know in one of the commercials he's wearing his fur coat. And that's just
Oh, my God, that fur coat. Oh.
That's a 70s baller move. But the thing I like about Brute by Fabergé is how baller was it? They have their label was a gold or a silver medallion hanging around the neck of the bottle. I mean, that is so baller.
Yeah, compared to the Old Spice, like, you know, the mast of a sailing ship where it's just, you smell like the sea.
He looked like, in that fur coat, he looked like Ben Mendelsohn from what movie did he wear that big coat? The one where Leonardo DiCaprio got clawed by a bear,
The Revenant,
yeah.
Or was it old? I can't remember. But Ben Mendelsohn had that big fur coat on, that ridiculous fur coat. Joe Namath. I don't know if you guys remember this, but about 10 years ago, he got plastered, and he was on the sidelines trying to grope. I think it was Michelle Foyer or somebody like that.
Susie Colbert.
And, pardon me?
Susie Colbert.
Super, yeah. And so he had to dry out, and he dried out, and now he's got a resurgence going. I mean, down here, he's on TV every day doing a commercial for something. I don't remember what it is now. Oh, yeah, the free medical benefits commercial. I don't know if they show it there, but he's doing it here.
Like a Medicare supplement thing. Yeah. If you live in certain zip codes, you can, yeah.
I'm like, how about that? Broadway Joe is still getting work.
Well, and you know, he was at an age in the 70s that he would be at the age where people in his peer group need Medicare benefits.
We can be like Tom Selleck doing that commercial for reverse mortgages. That's like, Did you imagine you'd ever see that?
Yeah, because then Wilford Brimley died.
Oh, did he die?
I don't know, but it's like he had been doing some of those commercials too.
He got awfully demanding with that diabetes commercial he was on. He's like, you check your blood sugar and you check it often. I do what I want to, thank you.
Do you guys remember the made-for-TV movie Joe Namath was in, where he's in a motorcycle gang? I should have looked that up.
No, but that might be better than watching Friends one night.
I don't know if it was better than
Tom
the Brian.
Brady doing that?
What's that?
Can you imagine Tom Brady doing that? A quarterback.
CC and
in his hyperbaric chamber at night.
It was CC and the company CC Rider is what it's called.
Oh.
And it's his number.
Not to be confused with CC and the Dixie Dance Kings or whatever.
You guys don't remember that. Well, Brian Bosworth.
I don't.
Brian Bosworth also had, what was it, Blue Steel, where he was in a motorcycle movie.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
He was in the 80s, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, so.
We might have to review those in a future episode, those two.
He had that mullet Bosworth did. So ridiculous.
Bosworth had the biggest, you know, falling back to earth moment ever when he just got flat done run over by Bo Jackson.
He sure did.
All right, and then here's our last commercial.
How about a movie tonight, huh?
Wow, what's that aftershave you're wearing?
New High Karate aftershave is so powerful, it drives women right out of their minds. That's why we have to put instructions on self-defense in every package. High Karate, the brisk splash-on aftershave that smooths and soothes and cools. High Karate, aftershave, cologne, and gift sets. High Karate, be careful how you use it.
Yikes, that one had a lot of acting in it. That was a big production value.
I remembered the commercials. I had forgotten the fragrance. Like, really, High Karate, it really didn't register me as a fragrance, that was something people had, and because I think it's no longer available. I remember those commercials from it as a kid.
I don't remember that one, but I do remember some High Karate commercials.
Yeah, it was from the 60s through the 80s in the United States and United Kingdom, but the UK started making it again in 2014, the High Karate.
Really?
So then I went back and I looked, and there's one with Bobby Riggs, Billie Jean King fame, and he's kind of self-deprecating himself. It's like, you don't want to be the number one women's player in the world. You want to be a chauvinistic male. But when I go out and splash on High Karate, I can be a 55-year-old sex symbol and all the women come running to him. Because that was like the hallmark of those commercials, was like you'd splash something on and then, you know, the women would come running to you. So,
and the,
sexist at all.
No, and the hidden joke there was that I think Bobby Riggs, I mean, they had that the whole thing planned because he didn't think it was fair that the women tennis players, you know, weren't making even fractionally what men were making. So they did that whole thing as a
publicity stunt.
Yeah, and Riggs was actually, I mean, he and Billie Jean King really planned that whole thing out, and it worked.
Yes, because it was one of the biggest talked about sports moments of that era until the Olympic men's hockey team in 1980.
Yeah.
He kind of knocked it off for the biggest story, you know, in that kind of era, the era that we're talking about in this podcast, the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
And High Karate was a budget aftershave sold. So what was up going on with aftershave back then? We had, do you remember Menin's Skin Bracer? There was Old Spice, High Karate,
yep.
Brute. What was the deal? Why
my
was everybody...
dad was a Menin man for whatever reason.
Aquavelva,
yes.
Well, why were we drinking the stuff? What were we doing with it back there?
Well, and then there's like I think the electric razor had just come into vogue, and so to prep your skin for that, because then even Old Spice had a shaving cream and a kind of like electric razor pre-shave. So either one is, we needed some kind of skin prep for our skin, or more likely companies saw a potential revenue stream and we'll just sell something to them that they need, that they don't really need, but we'll sell it to them and we'll just flood the air with advertisements. And then, of course, if one company's making money with it, everybody jumps on board. And so just like there's always the low budget thing. So I guess that's why that maybe, you know, me, Mr. Sophisticated here, and I don't, you can't see the eye roll on podcast. but that's maybe why I never heard of it.
When I was a kid, I thought that when you went to the barber shop and those combs did that thing, I always thought those were like being dipped in a big thing of aqua velva or whatever. Remember it was green or blue? I always thought that was what was in there.
Well, now that you've broached the subject, what was that liquid?
I thought it was scope.
It was obviously some kind of disinfectant or potentially the...
Yeah. It's got to be. It looks delicious. I don't know.
Looks like the hard Mountain Dew.
Well, now that we're done with those commercials, let's get back to Bo and Luke Duke. Looks like they're stuck in a jump midway across the ravine. Looks a lot like last week's jump. Let's see how they're going to handle this one.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way, the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Just a good old boy.
And he said, I walked by and it's Waylon Jennings sitting there. And my dad said, so I stopped and I said, excuse me, are you Waylon Jennings? And he said, well, yes, sir, I am. And he tried to make it to his feet, but by then his body had just, you know, failed him so much he could barely get up. And he said, I sat down next to him and we talked about guitars for a while. You'd never guess. He was like this Southern gentleman, you know, type character. And he said, we sat there and talked for about an hour until whoever was helping him was getting pissed off at me because that other person, you know, they need to do turnover. They need to get people out the door so they can help a second one to make a living. And so he said, and then I never saw him again. A little while after that, he passed away. So
yeah, he passed away.
He did that open, the opening song he did, which is.
I guess he was 42 when he did that. The opening song, I guess, is what I read.
Wow.
And
I picked that when we drafted top five theme songs from the 70s and 80s. I think the theme for the Dukes of Hazzard was one of mine because it hit like number one on the country charts when they released the a commercial release of it. They added another verse, another chorus. They changed the lyrics to the last verse to do an inside joke about where they won't show my hands and face on TV. And it kicked up the bass and it ended up being one on the country charts. I think in the top like 20 of the Billboard charts.
Yeah.
It was a cool song.
It was a great song. Yeah. One of the 90s groups, maybe not Green Day, I can't remember, one of them redid it, and it was actually pretty good. Maybe it was the Killers, I can't remember. But Waylon Jennings was listed, his credit on the show was Balladeer, because you know how he narrated? I don't know why they didn't call him the narrator, but they called him the Balladeer, which is...
Well, because he would, I guess, sing too, because they show his guitar, and then they would, whenever they would like freeze frame, like the car, the general is just leaving the dirt pile, right? Conveniently placed dirt pile to jump. And then he would make some kind of, you know, pun or joke or...
I don't know how the Duke boys are going to get out of this one or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
They almost ran that car, that 70 Challenger or whatever it was. They almost ran that car into distinction or extinction because they used so many of them.
They used 309.
Yeah.
Where they even had to get 68s and put an extra piece in the grill to make it look like a 69, because back then cars stayed the same except they'd always change one little thing, and then when you're with old guys they'd be like, that's a 57 this and that's a 58 that, because they would, you know, there's nothing else to do back then except stare at cars.
And they had a whole year for that particular year model to burn into their memory, and so my dad has instant recall. Well, you know, the 54s, it had like one extra screw in the lens cap there. And
like, well, they said they tried using 1970s Challengers, and Brian, but they said they it was
they
too
couldn't go,
Too much work, yeah, to convert it.
70 was a significant redesign, mainly for NASCAR, because they moved the rear glass, because in the 68s and 69s, it would, at highways, at NASCAR speeds, it would cause rear lift. And so they had to change the rear windshield, and so that kind of started to change things.
And so,
see, that was my thing of loving this, is I was kind of a car guy, and I was a Dodge car guy, and so a TV show that's going to feature a 69 Dodge Charger, I'm in.
Okay, regardless of what. So what two vehicles, Brian's our car guy here, if you haven't guessed here, folks. And yeah. Brian, what two vehicles did, let's see how much you know, what two vehicles did Daisy Duke drive in the series?
So Daisy started out in a yellow with a black striped Plymouth Roadrunner. I think it was from like 73, 74. It wasn't the original Roadrunner from like 68. It was like a 73 or 74. And then there was an episode where I remember them, like her cousins, the Duke boys, pushing it off a cliff or something like that. So then she started showing up in a Jeep CJ or whatever called Dixie.
I remember that. Yeah.
I missed the. I love that yellow on that color.
I like that too. That was
a yellow
cool
Roadrunner.
Her Jeep was cool. It was a 1980 Jeep CJ 7, and that was really cool too. But I do miss the Roadrunner. That was a cool car.
If you watched it too, the Jeep they had, sometimes it'd have the doors on, sometimes it'd have the doors off. It'd have different roll bars. So I think they used different Jeeps during the course. Because not only did they go through like 309 Chargers, they had about 350 cars in total.
Yep.
Between the squad cars were old, like either LAPD cars or California Highway Patrol squad cars. And they would go through those. Not bad as the Blues Brothers going through squad cars. But yeah, they went through a lot. But it was that 74 Roadrunner and then, the 80 Jeep. I just remember it as being a Jeep.
Yeah,
and I heard that Bo and Luke were going to be in a Volkswagen van, but they went against it because they wanted to have them slide across the hood.
So the slide, the sliding across the hood wasn't originally meant to be in there, but one time when Tom Wolpat, I can't remember if he was Luke or Bo, I think he was Luke, Tom Wolpat was running in front of the car and slipped and like fell onto the hood and then caught his shoulder or something on the antenna. So it kind of spun him around. And so future episodes, they removed the antenna. So you'll notice it doesn't have a front antenna so that he could slide across. And that became so popular that he would do it a lot. And then I tried doing it once with Chris Moody's Dart and he got mad at me because he's worried that the little rivets in your jeans would scratch up his car, so I never did that again.
Yeah, that happened to my dad's 82 Riv. He had a brand spanking new 82 Riv, and I put a big gouge in the hood.
Yeah.
And that never happened again.
I apologize to Chris then. I apologize to him again now. I didn't mean to do that to your car.
Those rivets will get you every time, man. So Friday night, our last podcast, we covered Lou Ferrigno versus Christopher Reeves, who kind of did the Incredible Hulk. So Friday nights, depending, like here in the Midwest, it was 7 o'clock was Hulk, 8 o'clock was Dukes of Hazzard, and then 9 o'clock was Dallas. So I think I'd watch the Dallas theme song, and then I'd kind of tap out, go play some floor hockey after that or something, but...
Because we were young then when it first came out. If it started as a winter replacement series in January of 79, so we would have been 8-9 years old then. And so 9 o'clock, it's like your parents are already getting on you to go to bed.
I was able to watch that whole sweep. I watched it every week, even Dallas. I loved that show. I did. And so I watched it. I watched that whole sweep every single week. Three great shows right in a row. 3 hours, nonetheless, of great shows right in a row.
Yeah, and it's weird that year after year, all three of them would stay on the air, so they didn't really change the lineup and stuff. That was pretty, because they're all popular.
Appealing to three totally different,
We'd never see that now, yeah. It would be, yeah, now they always
never
have.
See it now.
Yep. That's just crazy.
They always link things together so they can. They can hold viewership throughout that entire sweep. But back then they didn't necessarily do that all the time. So, guy that was watching the Dukes of Hazzard wasn't necessarily going to be watching Dallas, but I did.
Well, back then when you had less choices and less remote controls, pretty much you'd set it on a channel and leave it there for the night.
Well, we didn't have any channels.
Right.
So much choices. Exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Now it's you know, for the first half of the season, and they don't do the, you know, 27 show seasons anymore either. It's like 12 shows. So the first six shows, before they go away for their winter hiatus, is on, you know, Tuesday at 8, and then when they come back, it's on Thursday at 9, and they just mosh it around. But now they're like really targeting audiences because there's so many choices. Where, yeah, you group together shows for an audience to try to capture them, the same audience, because you are segmented the audience out so much.
Yeah. What was your favorite episode, Brian, of The Dukes of Hazzard?
It's a great question that I wasn't prepared for. I really like the episode where some out-of-town crook is going to pull a robbery, right? The Duke boys get blamed. They spend the rest of the hour trying to clear their names. The General Lee flies through the air, and some squad cars crash. I like that episode.
I think I remember that one episode like over and over again. Yeah.
I remember the one that Crazy Cooter kept on coming at you. Crazy Cooter coming
so
at you.
So did you notice he was in the first season, he had like a beard and he was scruffy, and he didn't own Cooter's Garage, or they never mentioned Cooter's Garage in the first season. And you're right. Like, what is this?
And he's crazier.
Yeah, and it's like, what is this guy, a meth dealer or what? And then they kind of calmed him. They made him shave, and then he had Cooter's Garage, and then they were always like, you're an honorary Duke boy. He really, like, chilled out after the first season. I kind of like the first season better, though, because he was mysterious, like, yeah.
You remember that one episode where the show wasn't sensitive to the sensibilities of African-Americans?
I think I remember that episode also over and over again.
it was hard to believe it was even on the air.
One African American character, reoccurring character, and he was like the sheriff of Chickasaw County or something like that. And he wasn't corrupt like Roscoe P. Coltrane was, but he could still not capture the Duke boys. But he was always in, you know, like the Chickasaw County line. He'd be like waiting for him there, and then when something go wrong, he'd kick his car. And that was like the only African American character I can remember. I don't know if it was or not.
It just seems like that was Cleon Little to me for some reason, but could be wrong.
And then we had Enos. Remember, he went and did a year of his own TV show. That was, I think, yeah. It was 13 episodes, maybe. Yeah.
So that shows you how quickly this became a big hit. It ended up being like the number two show in the country for a while. It debuted as a replacement in January of 79. And by the fall of 80, they had a spinoff series already, this Enos one that, yeah, I think that had like a season or so, and then it just never caught on.
The guy that played Roscoe was in an episode of
Murder, She
Andy Griffith the other day. No, oh. Andy Griffith was before, you know, obviously before Dukes, but he played one of Annie's buddies that played the guitar.
Huh.
Came into town, was picking and grinning, and it was so funny because he's standing on the corner playing guitar and everybody's gathered around him, and you know, it was just him playing guitar, but yet you could hear a bass and a piano and you know, somebody playing the jug or whatever in the background. But plus it was electric guitar, and here he's playing an acoustic guitar. But yeah, he played in an episode of Andy Griffith where he was kind of like one of the buddies that came back to town to visit him.
A funny thing I looked up, do you know he was, his that actor that played Roscoe was 4 years older than the actor that played Boss Hogg? Boss Hogg the actor that played Boss Hogg was only 49 in the first season.
Denver Pyle, right?
No, Denver Pyle.
Denver Pyle played Uncle Jesse.
Oh, that was Uncle Jesse, yeah.
Charles Brooke was Boss Hogg, and I've seen him then in other roles too, where it's just you don't think it's the same actor because of how he's just the way he's playing it, where he played Boss Hogg. The storyline was that Boss Hogg was married to Roscoe P. Coltrane's sister, and you'd think, well, that's such a huge age difference in looking at him, but yeah, when in actuality they were that close in age where that would work out.
Huh.
Lulu, yeah. I never heard that. His wife's name was Lulu, I remember that.
Yeah, Lulu, yeah.
And she got along with Daisy. She got along with Daisy Duke really good, even though Boss Hogg kept firing. We forgot to mention the episode where he fired Daisy Duke every episode.
Or they had a speed trap for some country act or some musician going through town, and they'd have to play at the Hogs Nest or the Boar's Nest at the end for free to get out of their ticket. And I think that was more a way to just pad out an episode where they didn't have enough material. Like when the bad guys that were had done something and the Dukes accidentally figured out what was going on and captured them, when that ran short, that they had to pad out an episode. So then they had a bunch of different, usually country artists that ended up playing a song at the end of the show.
What was Daisy's job in that show?
I think she was a waitress at the
Boar's Nest. That's right. At the Boar's Nest, yep. And so,
Did Bo and Luke have a job? Pardon me. Did Bo and Luke have a job?
No.
No.
So,
they were on probation.
Probation from running Moonshine, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, they couldn't have guns. So, they always would have bow and arrows, and they'd have dynamite.
Yeah.
And it's like, how are you in probation where you can't get a gun, but you have this ample supply of dynamite?
And it holds true today. You can't have a gun, so people go out and buy a gun.
It's... Yeah, I kind of like that. And then they had compound bowls, which were pretty new for the time, actually.
But the dynamite... they were Hunger Games before the Hunger Games.
Yeah. So...
Well, and just awesome shots, right? They open up the trunk, pull out the bow and arrow, 350 yards, flaming bow and arrow, starts a grass fire or whatever, or like one little tiny hay bale, or blows up a car, or hits a gas tank. Yeah, so.
Well, they did have a job in season 5. They left to go do NASCAR, and for some reason, Coy and Vance came in that same day. They left to go do NASCAR.
I think the reason was called salary dispute.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah, they didn't want to pay the Tom
royalties,
Wopat,
right?
John Schneider, royalties or salary or something. So there's a contract dispute. So then all of a sudden, mysteriously, they're on the NASCAR circuit. These two replacements, just like central casting to replace the two of them, come in, and then when they clear up the salary dispute, all of a sudden with little fanfare, those two are just gone. They're like in the episode, and then before the first commercial, they're gone, never to be seen again. And the Tom Wopat, John Schneider characters are back. And that's about the time I lost interest. And I was trying to think, was it because of the salary dispute and they're changing the characters because it was kind of a character-driven show? Plus, how many ways can you do the formula that we talked about without it just becoming redundant, which it had? Or was it the fact that now we're getting into our teen years and we got plenty of other interests?
Yeah, I think it was all three. Yep, and then when they see, that's the problem. They left and they never mentioned them again because they had to go take care of a sick relative all of a sudden. And I don't know why Bo and Luke came back from NASCAR on the same day or why they had to both go on the same day. But
Bo and Luke were off with Chrissy Snow somewhere.
There you go.
Yeah, that's had to be it. They were off with Chrissy Snow, and Chrissy was phoning it in, and then she'd hand the phone off to Bo and Luke, and then they'd call home, and they just couldn't hold that.
We should write and do an episode where we all these characters that leave shows early that they got together somewhere and do like a dialogue.
Well, which show was on the air longer, Enos or She's the Sheriff with Chrissy Snow? Which one? They both were off right away. Like the Ropers didn't last very long either.
Free the Crowd was another one, and the Ropers. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them that didn't last. Last long because, and for different reasons. I mean, the Ropers, I don't think that they left for the same reason that Suzanne Summers left the show, but,
Well, now looking back on it, they would have someone do like a 7-show series to pick up at, after Christmas when the shows that get canceled during the first half of the year to be ready for replacement. So that was what a lot of these were, is you have a known entity and you're just going to try to see if it works. If it works, great. You got a hit on your hand. If it doesn't work, you just throw it away and go on to the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me say one more thing about Coy and Vance. Do you guys think it would be better or worse? What if they just would have called them Bo and Luke and then somebody would say, well, you guys look a little different today or something. And you know what I mean? Just kept the same name. Would that be better or worse, do you think?
Just wink at the camera. It's like, I just didn't get enough sleep last night.
That's what they did in Roseanne when they had the two daughters.
Yep.
There were two daughters, Becky. So when they brought the show back, they had both of them in the show. And then they're like, how are we going to do this? And they decided, who cares? Let's just have fun with it. And so, they have one daughter, Becky, I think. Was Becky the one that left the show?
I think so.
Yeah, they're like talking to one another, and John Goodman walks by like, what is going on here? It's like a Twilight Zone type thing. But no, I think Coy and Vance were brought in to be scabs because, you know, Wolpat and what's the other guy's name were holding out
John
for money.
Snyder.
And there was always a hope that they would come back. And so I don't think that they could have ever gave them the same name unless they decided to take a hard line and just fire those guys.
Yeah.
But that never happened. I don't think that it was ever, you know, not
money,
a hope to bring them back.
Yeah, too much money to be made in that era when there was so little competition.
Yeah.
And since I'm obsessed with ages, do you know how old John Schneider was when the season series started?
28.
That's how old Tom Wopat was, 28, yeah. John Schneider was 19 when that show started.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah, in the story, the Tom Wopat character was the older cousin, and he had gone off to the Marine Corps or something like that while the other cousin was like still in high school. So that's to explain the age difference there.
I don't think 19. Back then they either had summer series either. Like nowadays they have, you know, they have all their winter shows and stuff like that. But in the summer they have shows that just run during the summer, like, you know, like Survivor or American Idol or whatever it is. And then, you know, those shows aren't on during the winter. And, you know, back then they didn't do that.
No, they used to have reruns, and then you'd almost like you'd use the reruns to then build up to the next season, almost like replay parts of the last season, like select episodes ending with the last two, you know, the penultimate and then the ultimate episode before they'd start the fall season.
Exactly, yeah.
And now everyone binge watches everything, so that's kind of someone will binge watch the whole season before the next season of something comes out, and so they're not going to do that anymore.
And like you said, that there was, you know, 20-some show seasons back then. And, you know, now they're showing reruns like 3 weeks after the first one ran.
Yeah, and that's what the Dukes of Hazzard should have done when Coy and Vance came on. They had four seasons of reruns at that point. They could have just put reruns on when the...
Yeah, I mean, they're already reusing car jumps because they'd broke so many cars. You could tell it's like... the stock footage jumps were being used for the General Lee. It's like,
boy,
different scene of the same formula. And then the car would jump the same dirt pile and everything.
And yeah, they would cut that scene. Every time those cars landed, you could see the axle just buckle like they would cut it right at that second, like right when it just went to hell. Like,
yeah. And then the front end of the car would always like mash upwards when it landed, you know, mash. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, bend the frame up. And, you know, I think when they jumped those cars, they still used them somehow. They kept them around for parts or you know, tack them together to make jump cars out of them or whatever they did.
As an aside to cars jumping, so a World Rally car, and they have much better suspensions, they were going to attempt to break the longest jump for a vehicle. And so it jumped, right? And then however long it was, 275, 300 feet, when it landed so hard, like you said, it buckles the hood and everything, but the windshield broke. It was that much force, even with a much better suspension. So it's obviously a regular, you know, stock car that isn't going to survive all these jumps.
Yeah, sometimes those jumps, you know, they cut away, and, you know, the Duke brothers were bracing for this hard jump, and it would be in the air, and you'd see, like, one guy in the car with a helmet on, you know, coming down, and they would land, and then both of them were in the car doing this, you know. We didn't notice stuff like that when we were kids.
Right, yeah. A car's flying. Maybe Dad'll do that next time we're coming home from the Piggly Wiggly.
Well, at least, and then Knight Rider was trying to compete, and he wouldn't have a landing ramp. Like, he would go off this huge jump, and then you would just see, what's the actor's name?
Hasselhoff
would just kind of shake for a second, like, when they landed. I was like, come on, you just jumped 500 feet, and you just shook for a second? Yeah. He's like...
Michael, you almost tore my dick off on that jump. Sorry about that, Kit.
Well, that was kind of part of the end of the Dukes of Hazzard, is that Knight Rider was doing these same car things and more modern technological versus the same. We've already seen the General Lee jump, you know, 55 times.
Yeah.
Or how many ever episodes they had. I think there's one episode the General Lee didn't appear in, but 147 episodes, so 146 times you've seen the General Lee jump, and it's like, and the car chases in the gravel get to be, you know, pretty formulaic as well. I like to go through and read one-star reviews of things just to get a laugh out of things that I enjoyed or thought were good. And online, this is a very highly rated show, even now with people buying the retro DVDs and stuff like that. Lots of, you know, 4.8 stars out of 5. And I couldn't find any funny one stars or two stars, but I did find a couple that kind of go with what I'm thinking of it. So Be Creative, with an 8 in there for the 8 part, gave it a 1 star and said, "I forgot how redundant and silly every show was. How did I like this show as a kid? Oh, that's right. This was before cable and VCRs. Very limited choices," which is kind of what we talked about, is there wasn't much else on. So they could get away with the formula because people's eyeballs were turning into it. And like you said, they were leading into Dallas, and you like Dallas, so you'd watch it. And then,
wasn't it more about, though, that our sensibilities weren't sharpened by then, you know, as kids?
As a 10-year-old, it's pretty cool. Oh, you're getting away from, you know, because us, you know, good upstanding citizens would never run from the law or anything like that. Mm. So it's, oh, they're running from the law and they're getting away with it. And yeah,
I just didn't know any better. That's what it was for me. I just didn't know any better. But go ahead.
So then Augie gave it 2 stars and said, "I used to be thoroughly entertained by the Dukes of Hazzard when I was a child. I do not know what has changed, but I don't enjoy it any longer, nor does my husband or children."
Come on, Augie.
This was a waste of money.
Oh, come on.
Now, if I was to watch it now, I would still watch it for the 69 Dodge Charger and for Waylon Jennings' little quips leading out to advertisement.
And you know what you're getting out of the show. Yeah, like Jim said, you know what you're getting when you go into it. And I've been going back, you know, to study for this. I was kind of rewatching. I was really impressed with how deep of a world, like, they had. We didn't even talk about Cletus. Remember Cletus? He was Boss Hogg's cousin that also worked, kind of took over for Enos a little bit. And there was just so many side characters. It was kind of a deep world. Like, they had Lulu and, you know, everybody.
Side characters and guest stars. Lots of guest stars. We didn't talk about Huey Hogg, his nephew.
Huey Hogg.
Yeah, wasn't he?
Huey.
Yeah, he was
named after the helicopter or whatever. yeah
they had Flash the dog. Yeah, it was a pretty deep, they had a pretty deep world.
Do you think the dog was added after Smokey and the Bandit, when Jerry Lee Reed's character in Smokey and the Bandit had that dog with him when he was running the Coors back to Florida? He had a dog with him too that just would mope around. It's like the same type of dog even.
Yeah, I was going to do, I wanted just to do a whole episode where we do the TV show knockoffs of the movie. So I don't think this wasn't a knockoff of Smokey and the Bandit. They said there was actually a movie called Moonshiners, I guess, that this was based on.
Yeah.
That had the same characters and stuff, same names.
So I read once in Hot Rod or Motor Trend or Magazine the story of the person they based that Moonshiners off of. He had a 58 Chrysler 300 where he modified the springs so that when it had a trunk full of moonshine, it would still sit level. And then he would run from the revenueers. And when they looked at the gas pedal, because when he pushed the gas pedal down so hard, it had bent over the little rod that holds it in place because he'd be mashing the gas so hard. And he named it Traveler, which was the name of Robert E. Lee, the general, Confederate general's, you know, stately white horse that he would always be riding. So then, So then that became a movie. I remember reading a story about it in like Hot Rod or Motor Trend, and then that movie kind of became the basis for the Dukes of Hazzard. But then they start changing the names. I guess like General Lee tested higher than Traveler because most people don't know anymore who Traveler was. And then I do remember once there was a spoof in Alton Brown's Good Eats. And he was meeting someone at the Mason-Dixon line because he was going to trade New York-style corned beef for something Southern. I don't remember what it was. And so he showed up in a car, like named the General Grant that was blue with the Union flag on the top and met someone in a General Lee, and I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah, and I guess some stations won't show it now because of the... I mean, it's too bad they can't superimpose an American flag on top of the car.
No, yeah. Yeah.
There was a This American Life episode where there were these two African-American kids that grew up in New York City and loved that show as a kid and would have the toys with the, you know, Confederate flag, the rebel battle flag on top, and then it didn't dawn on them right at that age because it was just a toy with the show, but how that's being used as a symbol in a popular American TV show. They were just like us as, you know, 9-year-olds. You know, oh, there's a car chase and this car's so cool and they have to jump in through the doors because the doors are welded shut. And you don't think of the connotations of what that battle flag means.
Yeah. I think the movie, the Johnny Knoxville movie had an American flag on top, right? I can't remember now. I didn't really watch it. Yeah.
I never watched it.
All right. So how about to get us out of here, Jim? Could you do a – what's the noise? Roscoe, the actor, would make a noise that he made to his little kids so he'd make –
Coo-coo-coo-coo, right?
Coo-coo. Yeah.
Coo-coo. He would flash and coo-coo. It was any time he got excited.
And he'd go, I'm your superior officer. Coo-coo.
Yeah.
Well, then he'd also call, like, Boss Hogg is my little, you know, shiny chrome dome or my little
–
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And you know, the actor that played Boss Hogg would, and I think to be in the age we were, he would not allow his to kill anybody or do any drug stories. The actor that played Boss
Hogg.
Oh, really? Yeah. So it made it more of a PG, you know, our age group, you know, appropriate.
Yeah, everything was PG except Catherine Bach's outfits.
Yeah, she's
maybe that's why Bo and Luke had to go on vacation because they were doing heroin on too many episodes, you know, shooting up and stuff like that. And
well, and then that's a good point. And then Daisy Duke was, you know, she's the, in the lexicon, she's the only one TV character to have a clothing named after her. And,
oh yeah.
It was kind of funny when I was watching when Coy and Vance came on, and even Bo and Luke, like when they were helping her out of the car, they would get pretty friendly for being a cousin, like helping her out, like grabbing her all over.
It was set in the South.
Yeah.
There was
a lot of cousins in that show. I mean, so you got Uncle Jesse, who's apparently not a father to any of the three cousins who aren't brothers or sisters, any of them. And then Coy and Vance come in, and they're not brothers, and they're not. A lot of cousins going on there.
A lot of cousins. Well,
that's, I guess, didn't surprise me. I have 39 cousins on my dad's side, so to have a lot of cousins, it's not, to me, any kind of weird thing.
39 cousins. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Oof. My dad had more. My dad, I think, had 75, because his father was one of 12.
Oh, man, that's a lot of kids.
One other thing that it's like you think about now is that era, the 70s, it was just kind of coming out of the 60s where the good guys were white and the bad guys were black. So then Boss Hogg, the crooked county commissioner or whatever he actually was, I don't even know what his official title was, right? I can't remember it, would always be in this, you know, white suit, white hat, you know, look like the good guy. And then he's got his finger in every scheme in town.
Yeah, in the first couple seasons, Bo always wore either blue or a blue checkered shirt. And then Luke, or I screwed it up, Bo would wear the cream-colored shirt, and then Luke wore the blue.
Blue checker.
Yeah, blue or blue checker. All right, gentlemen. Well, as we mentioned, folks, the Dukes of Hazzard always had a musical guest at the end. So today we got something special cooked up for you. We got a number one song from April of 1972 versus a number one song from April 1982, so 40 and 50 years ago. You can play along and yell at your Bluetooth speaker or what have you and try to guess the songs as Brian and Jim do. Here we go. So, guys, I got two songs here. One of them was number one in April. I guess I didn't really specify the weeks too much, but one of them was number one in April of 1972, and one of them was number one in April of 1982. So that would be what, 40 and 50 years ago if I did it right? So so do you have any, let's hear your guesses. Jim, do you have any guesses? What I mean, first let's start out with 1972. Who do you think is going to be number one in 72? What song, Jim?
On the pop chart?
Yeah, Billboard is what I went with. Billboard chart.
I'm going to go with my pick from last week, the Dawning of the Age of Aquarius.
Oh, okay. That's going to be right in there. What do you think, Brian?
So I went, I have a theme for both my 50-year-ago one and my 40-year-ago one. The first theme is interesting voices, and then the second theme is ballads. And so for 1972, it's Bill Withers and Lean on Me.
Ooh, I like...
You know, he had a
Bill
lot
Withers
more
had an outstanding voice, and Lean on Me is a fantastic ballad.
He had a lot more hits than I ever realized that he had.
I really love Ain't No Sunshine.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. I like Gonna Be a, how'd that go? A Something Day, A Lovely Day.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah, Lovely Day is fantastic as well.
And then he's great song. And then the hard one where what's the other one? I like those two songs. He's known for his two songs, Lean on Me and Just the Two of Us. I don't like those as much as the two songs you guys just mentioned. Those are both really good. Okay.
I forgot Just the Two of Us. It's a great song too.
So you guys both had excellent picks, but it's you're both wrong.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rains. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was high
get to a
and
forest
the
here.
Ground.
You guys remember that one?
Yes. Yeah. All right. Be honest now. Who, when they first heard that when they were younger, thought that was Neil Young singing?
I just heard that recently. People thought it was Neil Young with the big Neil Young controversy lately. And people are going, I don't even like that song, A Horse With No Name. And it's like, well, that's good because it's not him.
Yeah, exactly. And I had to remind myself.
You're right. It sounds just like him, but yeah. I never made that connection.
Now that's go ahead, Jim.
I was gonna say that's one of the only two songs that can be played the entire way through with only two chords, two guitar chords, E minor and a E minor suspended type thing. But there's not very many songs that are two chords the entire song.
Now, if the 1982 number one hit is the other one, then we'll really have something. You said there's only two songs.
It might be now that I'm thinking about it.
I'm thinking that 82 might be Oh Mickey or Video Killed the Radio Star or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your guess, Brian?
So for 1982, I also went to Unique Voices. He's got a voice that's so unique and strange, I don't know if it's any good or not. But it's the timeless Willie Nelson and Always On My Mind, another fantastic ballad.
Okay. And I should mention that was America that sang that. A Horse With No Name.
Now, was that like their own? Were they a one-hit wonder? Did they have another hit that we would know?
They're like Bill Withers. I love their top five songs. At least they have according to Apple, their top five songs are Horse With No Name, Sister Golden Hair, which was produced.
Oh, yes.
That was produced by the... That had the fifth Beatle. I can never remember that guy's name that produced the Beatles. That was his...
Mike Lynn.
Okay, thank you.
Or Jeff Lynne.
And what about number three is Ventura Highway?
Oh, yes, that's...
Very good song.
Okay, so they're not a one-hit wonder.
And then Tin Man, Lonely People, You Can Do Magic. Yep, so they have a lot of good ones. Might be only two chords, you know.
About 17. Yeah, me. And I could tell it wouldn't be long. They was with
you guys be honest. Who thought that was Pinky Tuscadero when that song came out?
She kind of looks like her in the picture, I think. I'd say.
Mm-hmm. The haircut especially, yeah. Was that Pat Benatar's first hit, or was Hit Me With Your Best Shot?
This is actually Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Oh, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. That's how... Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Leave that in there so I can you can show my 1982 musical knowledge is terrible.
You know what? That's an easy easy mistake to make.
Do you think anybody would mix up which song was from 82 and which song was from 72 out of those two?
Probably not. There's a lot of like women in rock really started. I think Heart kind of broke those doors down, but there's a lot of early 80s songs with women.
Yes,
which was great.
So how many chords were in that?
Debbie Harry. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, how many chords were in that song, Jim?
Three. three chords, and then the chorus just plays them in reverse.
So, yeah, like I said, you can really tell which one was 1972, which one was 1982.
The whole disco era fit in between those two.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So let's go. Who wins 72 or 82 out of those two for you, Jim?
That's a hard one. I would have to go 72.
Okay. And Brian, I think I know which way you're voting.
And I'm gonna surprise you because of those two songs, I actually would go with the 82 one. I don't know if it's just something about America and that, you know, it's like. Why listen to a Neil Young imitation when you could just go listen to the real thing in 72? So I'm going to go with Joan Jett and the Blackhawks there.
That surprised me. You guys both went the I'm going to go America, A Horse with No Name. And it's not really Joan Jett's fault. I think that song, well, both those songs got played to death, I think. But yeah, I'm just going to go, maybe I've just heard that song too much, but I'm going to go with A Horse with No Name. So it's two against one, but they both put up a good fight.
You know, I was going to say that, talking about Heart a little bit earlier, and when you sit down, you listen to Heart and some of their songs, you know, retrospectively, they were so killer good. She's an amazing guitar player, which I never really knew until recently. But my God, their voice is like crazy on you those powerful notes she hits, those guys had it going on.
Yeah, an era before auto-tune and all that. Fantastic vocals
with
from
power.
Them.
You know, power she had. Amazing. And still has, actually.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, she
What's
was one of...
Heart song?
She was, well, I was just going to say, recently Jay Leno's Garage, they had... Oh, now I can't remember which one it was. It was Ann or Nancy. One of the sisters on, and you know, Jay Leno drives around with a star in a car or something, and of course they had a Barracuda, and I think Barracuda might be one of my favorite song by Heart.
I think
so,
too.
Yeah, that's a great song.
So they were the Wilsons, right? So they related to...
Ann and Nancy Wilson or whatever, yeah.
So they related to Brian Wilson somehow?
I didn't know that.
I thought they were. I thought that was their hook. I don't know.
Could be. I just didn't know that.
Well, they're related to Wilson Phillips somehow. I don't know. No, that's Brian Wilson's related to Wilson Phillips, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Maybe that's... Okay. There's Mike. We're not afraid to make mistakes here. So.
Remember when that album came out, that Wilson Phillips album? I was living in Colorado and just moved in with my girlfriend in this like 1910, 1912 big, huge house. And there were three... women roommates upstairs, and they played that thing over and over and over again until I finally went up and I knocked on the door and I said, I'm going to break that fucking disc. My God. Because not only was I getting it there, but I was getting it at work from it being on the radio every 10 minutes. I was just like, fuck, I'm going to go crazy. Tell that baby, are you gonna let him hold you down and make you cry? Don't you know?
Folks, this has been another episode of the 70s versus the 80s. You can always reach us at the 70s versus the 80s podcast on Facebook. We have some special episodes coming up. I know we're going to have a Top Gun versus Maverick, I think in May, when the Maverick movie, if it ever comes out. So look forward to that. We got some other episodes coming up too. Until next time. Like a true modern day Robin Hood.